It's been almost 4 years since Sean Fanning gave us Napster, forever altering the architecture of the entertainment industry, technology, and the law. And yet we as a society have yet to come to terms with these changes. We're still in crisis mode. The headlines are filled with shotgun litigation, ruined business models, and calls for a reconfiguration of copyright law, and even the internet itself. And the debates over piracy, file sharing, and the ethical limits of techno defense continue to rage in chat rooms and courtrooms, and they show no signs of ceasing. 4 years later, we still have yet to come to any consensus on what our post-Napster world should look like.
This is not a problem about music. This is a problem about media, entertainment, publishing. It's across the board.
We watch movies as they come out on the screen. Within hours, they're now made available on the internet. Within days, they're being pressed into DVDs over in Malaysia.
Maybe industry can solve this problem by internalizing other aspects of the business chain.
When we start again equating a copyright with a property right, that is a major, major shift.
Technology alone is not the answer. I don't think anyone has ever said that it was.
If it's a global distribution network, how do you deal with it when you're dealing with a patchwork of national and regional regulatory and legal systems?
The 800-pound gorilla in the middle of the room here is the fact that peer-to-peer networks and other networks, for that matter, have offered an alternative that is, for better or for worse today, free.
If there are sufficient legitimate alternatives that are attractive to consumers, then the gray market or the black market for availability becomes a less viable place.
How many people in this room would be willing to pay an additional $5 a month in their online service costs if they knew that, first of all, they could quit arguing about this subject?
On September 18th, 2003, the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School, in conjunction with Gartner G2, hosted a conference in Cambridge, Massachusetts. It was an industry summit. We invited leaders from the entertainment industry, the technology sector, and the legal profession to meet and discuss where we are in cyberspace and where we should be going.
I don't think there's any question if people in the industry know what's going to happen. We're going to have compulsory rates. There's no doubt within 10 years that's where this is going to go.
Too much focus has been paid over the last few years on sort of how do I stop the piracy, how do I stop my losses, as opposed to how do I take advantage of the cost benefit of electronic and digital distribution.
It's not about speed bumps. Speed bumps are a waste of time in an environment where people can redistribute the content stripped of the protection mechanism.
I say to the students, you know, can you imagine going, your dorm mate saying, you know, I got a new CD, it's really great, and you ask him, well, can I borrow it? And he says, no, I think we ought to protect the copyrights of the recording industry. You know, everybody laughs. It's preposterous. And so I think the real technology question then, maybe less how do you package it into some kind of digital container that closes it up, as to how do you build a system where this connection and this sense of responsibility to the artist becomes stronger.
I'm John Palfrey, Executive Director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School. We don't claim to know the future of digital media and cyberspace, but we do have a map showing 5 possible future scenarios for digital media over the coming 3 to 5 years. The first scenario, no change in the law. Confusion persists around key doctrines like the fair use defense to copyright infringement. The lawsuits by the RIAA and others drag on, but the record industry and possibly the movie industry right after it, as we know them, might well fail. The second scenario, taking property rights seriously. In this scenario, expressions like a song or other forms of digital media are treated just like any other form of property, real property like a house or personal property like a car. The third scenario, techno defenses work. Technology developers have been seeking to find ways to lock down digital content such as music and movies, such that creators are able to control the uses to which users put the work. Under the scenario, this vision of technologists and others to lock down the content is realized. The fourth scenario, public utility. Under this scenario, an agency such as the FCC could place limits on the prices that could be charged for digital media and, similarly, on the concentration of media ownership. On the one hand, further rights are granted to the property rights holders, and on the other hand, certain restrictions are placed on the way in which these businesses operate in the marketplace. And the fifth scenario, an alternative compensation system. In this future, we would replace the existing regime of copyright in favor of an alternative means of paying artists for creating digital media. Our original conference plan was to provide breakout rooms for each of these five possible futures after lunch. We wanted to provide conference attendees with the option of voting with their feet, letting us know what they thought were the most interesting and most plausible of these five scenarios. But by noon, it was clear that we were only going to need two rooms, one for attendees to discuss a possible future where the law and technology work together better to enforce intellectual property rights, and one room for a conversation of scenario five, the potential future in which we scrap copyright altogether for digital media and replace it wholesale with an alternative compensation system. Professor Terry Fisher, whose forthcoming book, Promises to Keep, outlines proposals on this very subject, led the discussion on alternative compensation systems, while Professor Charles Nesson led the discussion on techno defenses. Here's Professor Nesson.
Digital rights management, DRM, has hovered like a holy grail out in front of copyright owners. They long to reestablish control over the marketplace. But if you listen to any serious discussion, you learn that DRM, at least as a total solution, is more or less DOA. It doesn't work as a total solution, and it never will. Energy needs to focus instead on new business models. And they're coming. iTunes, Music Match, AltNet, a variety of efforts designed to break the impasse and deliver songs instead of albums at reasonable prices, enable consumers to participate without feeling like they're suckers. But free is very tough to compete with. And so artists and producers are looking for ways to make the sharing of free music cumbersome and hazardous. The RIAA lawsuits, for example, should be seen as both an expression of desperation and as an affirmative strategy to re-educate the public that there is something wrong with sharing music peer-to-peer, a little add-on to the feeling of risk that might lead a customer to go the legitimate route, head them off at the pass. But there has to be somewhere for them to go. Which brings us back to the necessity of real, viable alternatives. People want to download music in ways that give them a reliable product, not full of spoofs, not degraded, and in a form that they can use flexibly. Will you be able to put it on your portable? What if you have two of them? What about the car? So far, the industry has been reluctant to go for flexibility. But this clearly is an issue the industry needs to address. It was interesting to see some of the participants during our conference take out their iPods and Nomads and hold them up, waving them over their heads, making their demands for flexibility clear. So which way will the industry go? I personally think it's extremely important, ultimately the big question, to see that we don't need a total solution. All that's needed is enough of a solution to maintain a market. You don't need to eliminate copyright infringement. In fact, eliminating copyright infringement totally would be a total tragedy.
That's Professor Charles Nesson, the founder and now the faculty co-director of the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School and the William F. Weld Professor of Law. Our other breakout discussion dealt with the idea of alternative compensation systems. It was moderated by Professor Terry Fisher, whose forthcoming book sets forth a vision and an analysis of this possible future, how it would work, and what the pros and cons of such a departure from the current system of copyright would be. Here is Professor Fisher.
We have intellectual property rights because we need some device to provide a channel of money to the creators, but it's regrettable. Creates distortions and economic and political losses to put a price on this stuff. It ought to be free. And in an alternative compensation system, we regain a state of affairs in which entertainment, like ideas, are truly free. So the basic idea of these systems, and there are many variations, but the basic idea is to abandon a legal system in which people are charged for gaining access to particular recordings, charged money that goes into the pockets of the creators, and instead turn to a system in which the government collects from all entertainment consumers in the form of taxes enough money to distribute to copyright owners. And under this regime, therefore, it would be all entertainment products would be free to ordinary consumers. That's the key idea. So a little bit more specifically, there are four components of any alternative compensation systems. They are register, tax, count, and pay. So first, the creator of a digital recording, either audio or video, would register with a copyright office and provide some basic information about how long it is, what kind of work it is, what other works are incorporated in it, and so forth. That's the first step. Second step, the most complicated one, is create a tax system that would collect from consumers the money necessary to compensate creators. How much taxes? Well, that's a very complicated question, and different analysts working in this area use different formulas, but roughly speaking, somewhere in the zone of 15% would be enough to raise each year about $2.5 billion, which is turns out to be plenty to run this system. Step number three is count. The idea here is that the government would use systems to estimate, you don't have to have perfect numbers, but estimate the frequency with which each registered recording was being consumed. Consumed in the sense of being watched if it's a film or listened to if it's a sound recording. Now this you might think would be the simplest of the tasks, but it turns out to be among the hardest, because you want to devise a mechanism to track what people are enjoying in the world of entertainment without invading privacy and without giving artists opportunities to game the system to exaggerate their consumption numbers. And the last of the four components is the simplest, that's pay. You distribute the money. To repeat in accordance with the relative popularity of each work. So the basic idea here is the same as under the current system. It's consumer sovereignty. Artists make money in proportion to the value the consumers place on it, not the value the government administrators place on it. So that's the basic idea. And then in this breakout session, we talked about its strengths and weaknesses. Some people there were nostalgic about copyright law, either for its conceptual elegance, which would be sacrificed here. The technical way in which this anxiety or regret is expressed is in terms of cross subsidies, that in an alternative compensation system, it's bound to be the case that the tax burdens will not match exactly the benefits from the system. Some people would be paying more in taxes than they benefit from it. Other people will be paying less than they benefit from it. In using rough numbers here, the average American household spends approximately $350 a year now for access to audio and video recordings, whether buying CDs or renting VHS tapes or buying DVDs or whatever. It's about $350 a year per household. Under an alternative compensation system, the number would be about $100 in total. So they're huge cost savings. Everybody gains under the system. Nevertheless, the fact that under this system there would be, as I say, an imperfect fit between payment and benefit is troubling to some of the participants, and so we knocked around that idea for a while.
That was Professor Terry Fisher, Faculty Director of the Berkman Center and Hale and Dorr Intellectual Property Law Professor at the Harvard Law School. His forthcoming book, Promises to Keep, will be published in 2004 by Stanford University Press. One thing was clear from this conference. The conversation about what we should do about digital media is just getting started in earnest. We heard attendees narrow our focus on five scenarios down to two or possibly three scenarios. Over the next few years, the Berkman Center, along with our research partners at Gartner G2, will be working hard to offer possible answers to this extremely vexing set of problems. So check back in with us over the months and years to come. We'll keep posting audio, video, and white papers about what we learn at the Berkman Center website. We hope to keep this conversation going in a constructive direction until we find ourselves living in a future in which we're taking full advantage of the amazing possibilities of digital media. This piece was produced by the Berkman Center for Internet and Society at Harvard Law School. It was recorded and mixed by Benjamin Walker, and the original music was by Wayne Marshall. I'm John Palfrey. Thanks for listening.